Welcome to Box Office Battle, where we take underappreciated classics, box office bombs, and forgotten movies and pit them against each other for the right to be on Mount Valhalla. I'm Biggs.
I'm Zach.
And I'm the Beard.
So tonight we're going to cover two young genius movies. In my corner, we've got Finding Forrester.
In my corner, I got a real genius.
I like the way you sold that.
Yeah. Do you want to go first this time?
No.
I knew it. Okay. So my movie, so basically what it's about is Sean Connery is a shut-in writer. And everybody's lost track of him, but he's renowned as a famous author, much like J.D. Salinger in Catcher in the Rye, like just sort of disappeared. Nobody knows
Little
what
Thomas
he's up
Pynchon
to.
In him.
Like nobody knows what he's up to. So we focus on this young kid who's basically, he lives in the inner city and he's really smart and he winds up getting a scholarship to a prep school and it's all white kids in the school. And he only gets a scholarship because he's good at basketball. But he also happens to be a really great writer. And so he goes in and they have all sorts of scenes. Like there's one guy who's pitted against him as a, you know, a real rival for him. And they wind up going and shooting free throws and they show him sinking like 15 consecutive free throws. Like it's kind of great. It's all in one shot and you see him just hit free throw after free throw after free throw. While the other guy hits free throw after free throw after free throw. Must have been a nightmare.
To shoot.
Absolute nightmare to shoot that scene and like actually get him to hit these free throws over and over again. Because it's in one take though, you totally buy it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he's delivering groceries to Sean Connery's character. And he figures out at a certain point and lets the guy know that he knows he's this author. And the guy is really not doing well socially. I mean, he pays to get his groceries delivered in his house. He never, ever leaves his apartment. And it's in New York. The entire soundtrack is scored by Miles Davis. And it's done really, really well. I mean, like, they just do it in a way where, like, you see a lot of wet pavement and night. I mean, it's just done really well. It sets the mood. And so basically, Forrester kind of cracks the outer shell of Sean Connery's character and gets him to open up a little bit. And so he's helping him write. And his one rule to him is that anything he writes in that room stays in that room. It's not to leave the room. So eventually Forrester writes this really good story. And it was based off an exercise that Sean Connery's character gives him. And he tells him, you know, if you have writer's block, just start writing something else to get in the habit of writing. And then when you start to feel inspiration, start to write your own thing. So he does this with this story that's really well. He doesn't copy Sean Connery's work, but he starts to write one of Sean Connery's stories until it turns into his own story. Now, his teacher, played by F. Murray Abraham, who plays a dick in usual fashion. I mean, let's be honest. Dude always plays a dick, right?
That's his move, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much his move. And so he calls him out for plagiarism. At the same time, Forrester is like, he gets Sean Connery to go out. They go to a baseball game, and Sean Connery's like enjoying it. But as the crowd's kind of filing out of the stadium, he has a panic attack and has to kind of set aside until everybody leaves so that he can go home. So you can tell he's not doing well socially. Like he's starting to come out of his shell, but he still can't really deal with society. And he finds out that Forrester like is being brought up on plagiarism and he will not go to talk to the teacher. He's saying like you were supposed to leave that writing in the story, which leads to a giant climax in the classroom where he starts to basically the teachers are looking to kick him out because he's a black kid and he's not doing exactly what they expected him to do with the basketball team. And they're just overlooking what he, you know, does with literary terms. Sean Connery comes in and saves the day. Now, this is a movie that was somewhat sold as Good Will Hunting with mm-hmm. a black kid. I mean, that's basically how they sold the movie. But the movie is absolutely incredible. It was also Sean Connery's last acting role, at least at the time. I think he's done one since that I haven't seen, which is like an animated movie he's lent a voice to. As far as I know, it was his last live action performance.
When did Finding Forrester come out?
Oh, God.
Because I've always 2000s. Believed it was League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
No, it's after. It's definitely after League. But so Zach's looking it up.
Hey, as a judge, my job is fact checker.
I understand. I don't know what the last one he recorded was. I'm pretty sure it came out after League. But basically, the movie ends there. Like Forrester gets the respect of his.
It didn't. No, not at all.
What?
It came out 3 years before League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Yeah.
Maybe I just saw it after.
So there you go.
All right. Whatever. It would have been a great movie for Swanson. That's all I really got to say about the movie at this point. All
right. My corner, I've got Real Genius 1985. The tagline for this movie is, who else can turn lasers into light shows, aircraft into armchairs, and high-tech into hijinks?
Pink Floyd. It's the first
future
part.
Callback.
This movie was really entertaining to rewatch. I really enjoy this movie. It's not quite the intellectual level I was kind of like nostalgically had for this movie, just because it aged fairly poorly. Just because it came out in 1985, I mean, there's definitely some, as far as technology goes, definitely a lag for what's coming out now. But it starts out with, and I'm looking over here across the room and I see 2001 A Space Odyssey, the poster for it. And it starts out with the high tech for the time, clip for the Crossbow project, which is basically the space, a futuristic space shuttle that has this high-tech laser beam that can physically like eviscerate any person on the planet. Basically, you can, you know, assassinate people from space, is what the government's trying to develop. And this was basically in the time where the Star Wars program that Ronald Reagan was really funding, it was height of the Cold War. I mean, they were really, like, there was a lot of covert stuff that the Air Force was really trying to pull at this time. And this was kind of like spoofing off some of that. And there's this young kid, 15 years old, is really into lasers, really smart kid. He took the college placement test, did really well. He's the second highest as far as scores go. Accepted into a college, Caltech, for his knowledge in lasers. Bring him in. He goes in. He's really struggling. Because he's actually like, oh, I get a chance to go to college at 15. I'm going to really try hard. And they had some great montages. This is the age of the great 80s montage.
Yeah.
Where he's going to class.
I mean, Rocky 3 had ushered it in already.
You know, he's going to class. He's really trying to like do this classwork and do this laser development on the side, because that's really what they brought him in to do, is this laser development. But he's like, I'm gonna get myself a college education. And they show him, like, one of the montages they had was him going to class, and like everybody shows up like the first day and they're taking notes. The second day, like, or the second time they show him, like, half the people have tape recorders, like half the class is missing, there's tape recorders. The third shot they had was all tape recorders, and the entire audience was just tape recorders. You see like big 80s boom boxes tape recording. And the professor was just lecturing to a bunch of tape recorders and him.
Wasn't...
And then the fourth shot was actually a tape recorder of the professor in the class with tape recorders, like in the entire audience.
That's what I was going to get to.
So there was a lot of really like fun humor in that. And then there was a lot of great hijinks that gets pulled in this. There's a lot of pranks that gets pulled. The one guy, Kent, who is just trying to... he doesn't fit in awkwardly. He's got big Coke rim glasses that you can't hardly see through. He's just like kind of an asshole. You don't really like him.
He's the kind of nerd who will like debate you on any show you like and tell you why it's shit. Is that fair to say?
He could definitely be that guy.
Like, oh, you like Battlestar Galactica? It's not as good as the original. I mean, if that existed in the 80s.
Well, the original did, not the show.
Right, but there wouldn't be a remake argument.
Unless he's a time-traveling nerd.
He's not.
Okay. He's definitely not that guy.
He is firmly stuck in the 80s, sir.
Hey, maybe that just means he's a good time-traveler. He doesn't give himself up.
That's why he's a traveler, not a time tourist. Yeah. He ensconces himself in the era.
He's like, I love the 80s. I'm going to be there. All right. So there was a great prank where Kent had recorded the young kid. He called his mother because, like, he's just really struggling. Tear sob phone call to his mother. They tape record this, play in the school cafeteria. Everybody's laughing. So to get back at him, he pulls in with his car. It's this ugly yellow thing. And they take the car, disassemble it, and reassemble it into his room with, like, hydraulics. So it's, like, bouncing up and down in his room, lights flashing. To get back at him, he goes and sabotages their laser that they were developing, puts some grease on there. So the whole thing melts down. They had realized that when the thing had melted down, he gets this brilliant stroke that if he does a certain thing, creates this matrix, produces a solid. There's a lot of blah, blah, blah that goes on. A
lot of jargon that mumbo doesn't make sense.
That doesn't really hold up anyway. But he comes through this scientific breakthrough that they can develop this laser that they've been trying to do all semester. Builds this laser and the professor who has been pushing this along the whole way steals the laser, takes Kent's optic system that basically ends up being the laser guidance system for this weapon. They find out that they've been developing this laser whole along. They thought it was going to be a good thing and turned out to be just a government weapon.
I feel like you're about to lose out on a key detail here, which, I mean, I like both of these movies. Let me put it on Front Street here. So, what is it that the teacher really hates?
The teacher really hates popcorn.
Okay, continue.
He really hates popcorn. They had a scene where Val Kilmer shows up and he's eating a little small little bag of popcorn. He's like, hate that. Val Kilmer drops it on the porch and walks in the house. Just nonchalant. Up until this point, you've really not liking Val Kilmer. He's just this really goof off. Like, you're just kind of like, dude, what are you doing? You're not really got him. The government's really pushing the professor to develop this laser before that. The professor had actually been embezzling money to build his own house, this big, huge Victorian house with stained glass windows.
Much as we live in right now. Well, I live in here.
You don't have stained glass windows, though.
I do.
You do.
You walk by it in the front door all the time.
That's very true.
It's the only stained glass window we have.
Still counts.
But it's very colorful in the daytime.
So they actually come through this breakthrough, develop this house, develop this laser. They stole it. They come up with this plan to break in and realign the laser when they do their official test for the government. In order to get that, they had to find out where the test was going to be developed. And so they pull a prank on Mr. Kent, where they had pumped some gas in to knock him out into his room while he's typing at his keyboard. He's passed out. They put his little microchip into his braces that would transmit only to him as like this godlike figure, like in his head. And it comes out like, Kent, have you been masturbating? Have you been playing with yourself? And he's like, no. Yeah, and it's really fun. There's a lot of other hijinks that goes on, but they find out from him where this test is going to be developed. They break onto an Air Force base under threat of being shot. They break in, reprogram the laser to shoot the professor's house during the test. In the living room of his house, they put this giant tub that's about 6 feet across, 3 feet deep. Looks like a giant Jiffy Pop tin. Had tinfoil over the top. So when the laser had shot, it actually heated up the entire room and filled the professor's house with popcorn. The one thing he hates. And the show ends with kids playing in the popcorn, sledding down the hill that's coming out of the windows.
Everybody wants to rule the world. Isn't that the song?
That is the song.
Yeah. How Tears do I remember fears. This shit? I haven't seen this since high school. How do I remember it?
Because it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
We're doing two classic movies here. That's how. Real Genius has great moments, a lot of funny things. But here's the thing. you know, you don't get worldly advice from Sean Connery in Real Genius. You don't get a line like, women will sleep with you if you write a bad book.
You know, it doesn't have Sean Connery, but we don't have end of his career Sean Connery. Although that was a great line, we have a lot of great memories that get made in Real Genius. You don't see, and it comes back to a couple times, this great godlike voice. Have you been playing with yourself?
That's a fun line, but it's no, you're the man now, dog. Which is totally the other Sean Connery line. And it's even better than the advice he gives.
We got to see the young, blossoming Val Kilmer.
You made it sound like he was a girl, like, developing during puberty.
Kind of.
Val Kilmer, I don't know if you know this, but Val Kilmer's got some bosoms now. And they started to pop up in this movie.
You know, throughout the progression of this movie, you actually get to really see about the character develop to this young kid that just really doesn't care. He's in his senior year. Actually focus into something that he really wants to do, mostly to piss off the professor who was really wanting to kick him off campus and did not like his childish antics.
You see, but my movie, the main character winds up fighting with the English professor, not only getting him in jeopardy of losing his job, but also getting him to stay on in school. Furthermore, he's basically fighting for his academic life. I mean, this is a kid who comes from the streets and is able to rise himself above it, but you get to watch the progression where he grows as a person and actually can go and hit these heights. And that's, as much as I love Real Genius, it is very, like, I mean, it's a comedy. There's not a lot going behind it, but this is a movie that it talks about a lot of expectations with race. It talks about a lot of expectations with what somebody's capable of, like not judging people at face value. And it goes beyond race at that too. It's more about, like, you just see this kid, you don't expect him to be such a great writer, and he really is. I mean, this movie at its core really talks about what it is to be a genius, but yet have nobody believe that you're a genius. That's kind of what Sean Connery's character faces all the time. Everybody thinks he's a genius, and yet he just feels like he's a man, and so he has to deal with these expectations, and it cripples him. On the other side, you have this kid who's crippled by everybody else thinking he's not a genius, even though he is. It's kind of an interesting dichotomy.
What I have to say about Finding Forrester, this is the movie in which Gus Van Sant sold out, period. He has been producer up to this point, My Own Private Idaho, and his big one up to this point had been Good Will Hunting, and then he brings in all these A-star listers, Sean Connery, to make a sold-out movie, which is probably a great movie, but it's definitely the point in Gus Van Sant's career where he sold out.
Okay, so here's the thing. I told you this, you can't help what the marketing department does with a movie. They sold this as Good Will Hunting, but it is so far from Good Will Hunting. It is not Good Will Hunting. And you talk about A-lister like Sean Connery. I mean, if you'd even said the 90s, I would have believed this. But this was past his prime, Sean Connery. Now, you get a performance that's not past his prime, but people weren't packing the box office to see Sean Connery at this point. And the second most recognizable name is F. Murray Abraham. Nobody knew who... You know, nobody's going to movies to see F. Murray Abraham. Oh, I wonder how he's going to scowl in this movie. The kid is a complete unrecognizable at the time. I honestly don't know the actor's name. I wouldn't be surprised if he's done stuff since then. But there's not a lot of recognizable names. The story is not even reminiscent of Good Will Hunting when you really get into it, because that movie is more about people fighting about the heart and soul of a recognized genius. That's not what this is at all. The only string that connects these is the genius string. But, I mean, if you were selling out, would you pick Miles Davis doing the soundtrack in the 2000s? I mean, Miles Davis wasn't even respected by a lot of the jazz community at this point. I gotta say, like, picking Miles Davis as your soundtrack, that's pretty far from being sold out.
So, before you guys go any further, I just want to give you guys an update on where you're at. Brandon, you briefly fell behind when you said that finding Forrester was the moment Gus Van Sant sold out. Biggs, you fell back right in with him when you used that excuse. Because his remake of Psycho came out 2 years before Finding Forrester. And that's when Gus Van Sant sold out.
You know, I wasn't saying he didn't sell out. He just didn't sell out with this picture.
Hey, no, no. It's not. Listen, there's nothing with your argument that caught you behind. The fact that you didn't use that as a rebuttal is a weakness on your part.
I couldn't remember when it came out. I knew it came out when I was in high school.
I just want to let you guys know you are currently neck and neck.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, also, I'm not a fan of everything he's done by... Last Days,
also,
terrible movie.
I just hadn't spoken in a while, and I wanted people to remember I was on this episode. Before we go to final thoughts and my judgment, I want to give you guys one last chance because you are neck and neck. And should you still be tied after this, I do have a secondary tiebreaker. But I want you both to tell me, as if I've never seen your movie, why I should see it, specifically tailored to my interests.
This movie... If it had been marketed differently, you very well could have looked at this as a sports movie that had a lot more going on. Because it is. There's a big game. I mean, it's not a predictable outcome, which is kind of the best sports movies in a way. When you think about it, you can't always predict it. For example, Rocky up there. I'm looking at the album cover for Rocky. Nobody would have imagined that Rocky loses the fight. Even though there's a seeds of it at the beginning, nobody could have imagined that he would lose that fight when you go in watching that movie. It's a surprise because it's a moral victory. Finding Forrester is very reminiscent without cribbing from it. There is great sports moments in this movie. There's also a lot of character development that is entertaining and done by very good actors.
What I'm going to say about Real Genius, it is a very, very 80s movie. There are at least three solid montages that happen throughout this movie. The other thing was they had the classic college party without drugs and alcohol, which was kind of surprising because they had the main character being 15 years old. You're like, because I was rewatching it thinking, because I remember the party scenes, and I'm like, did they really have an underage drinking, smoking, whatever, using a lot of psychotropic substances? But it didn't, and it was really fun. But there were some very, very fine-looking 80s bikini-clad women that had showed up from the beauty college at one of these parties, and there were some very fine-looking, attractive women in 80s swimsuits.
So in other words, feathered hair.
You really didn't see that. It was mostly big, from big mid-back hair down.
Well, you guys both did pretty damn well selling me, so I have to go to my alternate tiebreaker, which is I'm going to look through the casts of your films and find out which random below-the-title cast member makes me laugh the most. And it'll be...
mine's not a comedy.
It'll be internal laughing, so don't spoil it. So I'm currently looking at Real Genius. That is mine you're fiddling with.
Oh, it was mine too. Sorry, Judge.
It's okay.
I feel like I'm doomed.
I'm now looking at Finding Forrester.
There's nobody funny in mine except for Sean Connery.
And
it's only two lines.
Actually, there is a cast member that makes me laugh the most. And it's not in, like, they are funny, and more like the fact that they're in this movie makes me laugh. So, the winner...
Oh, Matt Damon is in
mine.
No,
that's not the one. That's
not
the one.
I totally forgot Matt Damon's in my movie.
Of course, it's a Gus Van Sant movie. You gotta have Matt Damon.
Well, he delivers the line that Sean Connery dies. So, it's not even funny.
So, I'm sorry to say this. You came close. The random cast member who made me laugh the most was former Dogtown Z-Boy Stacy Peralta.
I don't even know who that is.
However, Big's film features, in an acting role, Busta Rhymes.
That's right, I forgot.
Thusly, dude, Finding Forrester wins.
Can I kind of say, like, a very big supporting actor?
Oh, yeah. He has a real role in that movie.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Busta Rhymes has a for real role in that movie. And the fact that Busta Rhymes has a for real role in a drama is amazing to me. And I hate that it came down to that, but the facts are what they are. Finding Forrester... Thank Busta for this one.
Can I be honest on that? Busta Rhymes kind of does what he's supposed to do in the movie, right?
He's not going to blow your socks off, but I mean, he doesn't take anything away either. Like, he brings to the table everything you needed him to bring to the table.
What you need him to bring.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, the movie is really well casted. I really enjoy Finding Forrest.
And Busta Rhymes is in a serious movie.
That's crazy. This is what I'm saying. Real genius. I love it. I haven't seen it since high school. I want to see it again. I tried to see it. I couldn't find it easily before this podcast, so I waited too long to watch it, even though I knew we were going to do this for 2 weeks. I love that movie. I absolutely love that movie. I adore it. I don't know for sure, but I think it's Val Kilmer's first movie. Maybe he did.
If it's not, it's early.
It was definitely a breakout movie for him if it wasn't.
No question about it. It was at least his breakout role. And where I kind of differ from you is like, you were like, I don't know where the fuck he's coming from, whatever. I didn't care. Val Kilmer was my favorite character in the movie. That was everything else I saw Val Kilmer and I compared to that movie for a long, long time. Like, I absolutely love that movie. My dad loved that movie. And he was the one who introduced me to it. I saw it when VCRs were old and they had the little like hinges that you had to push down.
Oh, I missed the hinge VCRs.
Yeah, that was how I saw it. So I was like probably like 7 or 8 years old when I first saw that movie. I would give that movie like a satisfactory plus. Absolutely hilarious. Great comedy. Definitely check it out. One scene I was a little dismayed you didn't bring up, but happy because I won, was the fact that they were skiing around in the hallways.
Yeah, they, like, I really froze. Thought you were going to mention that.
Yeah, they took liquid nitrogen and froze all the hallways. So you've seen this, Zach?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Not since high school, but I have seen it.
We're in the same boat, except for I'm older.
Yeah, exactly. More time has passed for you than me.
So satisfactory plus for sure in that. Finding Forrester, for all the reasons I give, I got to give it an excellent minus. Like, I just love that movie. It's one I watch probably every other year. I really love that movie. I love the messages in it. Like, it has a couple of good comedic moments, but it's really a good movie. I would even say there's no performances better than Good Will Hunting, since it is compared, because Robin Williams is like clearly
he's
the best
lights out.
It's amazing performance. But that being said, I think Finding Forrester is a way better movie than Good Will Hunting. That's not to rip on it. I think there's a lot more going on. There's a lot of kind of nuanced performances in it. A lot of silent things that you don't see in that movie. And I think it's a little more difficult to convey that stuff.
Before I can sort of weigh in on whether I agree or disagree, I need to revisit both of those in sort of a similar time frame. Because even though they were marketed as similarly, like, I was a kid when both those movies came out. So I saw them after the fact and never really considered them as
really
contemporaries.
The only common strings are that they're supposed to be geniuses and that Matt Damon has a cameo.
And Gus Van Sant.
Which I totally forgot.
Yeah, and Gus Van Sant.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess I lean towards Good Will Hunting. That being said, I need to revisit both before I really say
it. That's not to rip on Good Will
Hunting. And when I say I lean Good Will Hunting, it's not to rip on Finding Forrester. But I do need to revisit both before I can really decide where I'm at.
I guess what I'm trying to say is there's performances that I think are harder in Finding Forrester than are in Good Will Hunting. They have to do a lot more without saying things, especially with the main character.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, he does not speak his feelings. You have to see with the way he acts, which that dude knocks it out of the park. And I wish I knew the name of the actor and anything else he's done.
Hey, I can find
that. But if that movie was any kind of ruler, the kid must have a bright future right now.
All right. So my grades for both those movies, I have to give Finding Forrest an incomplete. I could not find it in time to watch.
Yeah. You should rectify that, though.
But it is definitely something. I mean, I really searched to find it. I had a tough time and ran out of time before I could finally watch it. It's something that I wanted to watch before we recorded this. And just because it sounded great.
And I had the same problem finding Real Genius.
Real Genius was
I really tried.
A lot more difficult than I was kind of like anticipating at least finding an old DVD copy somewhere around Hastings.
I feel like if there's any love for Val Kilmer left, it would be around. And that dude just wore out his welcome, man.
I was like, if they had that old video shop that still had that VHS section, it would be there. But that just doesn't exist.
Yeah, and I don't have a VCR anymore, so there's that problem too.
So incomplete.
Is that the way you said it? I feel like that character was from The Wire or something.
Said what? No, but similar. You are very much in the ballpark.
It was the way you said it. You're like, oh, I was like, maybe he was Omar.
Very much. No, he's not Omar. Come on now.
I don't know. I've never seen The Wire.
Let's not kid ourselves. But he is in Tremé, which is David Simon's follow-up to The Wire. And apparently he had a small role as a character named Alan in The Dark Knight Rises. But his filmography. Oh, yeah, Alan. His filmography is not as impressive as you'd hope, but I have seen most of the shit on it, so hey, well,
dude's
good
capable
for him.
Of some shit.
Oh, yeah. Listen, if you've seen Tremé, he is absolutely capable of some shit.
Okay.
Real genius, I'm going to have to go with you on this with the Satisfactory Plus. It's something that even being from 1985, I could still watch today and still get a lot of the same laughs. I looked at this from a different viewpoint that I did as a younger me. I really had a tough time with Val Kilmer at the start, but he is somebody that his character really grows on you throughout.
You find out there's weight behind them as you watch, right?
And there was a storyline that goes in where there was this guy that was living in the closet of the kid
who was he had his project used as a military weapon.
Yeah,
right?
And he basically was the same. I mean, he was brighter than Val Kilmer and the other character combined. Like,
was it Mr. genius. Vargas?
No,
I mean, was
no,
it that
wasn't.
Actor? Okay.
No, it wasn't him. But just kind of a guy that just showed up, and it found out the storyline behind him was he had this mental breakdown because he had all these solutions for problems, and basically the school had taken him, developed him in a nuclear weapon, or a, you know, weapon
of
mass destruction.
Some sort of weapon, yeah.
And he really just had a tough time with that and broke down. And now living in his steam tunnel, and he has to access some kid's room to get to his secret laboratory. The other thing that was kind of funny about that was he had built this computer program to fill out Frito-Lay forms.
That's right.
And so that he like put in like 2 million. He like shows up at the very end in this Winnebago that he won, like pulling this trailer full of TVs and shit that he had won from this contest, because you could enter as much as you want, no purchase necessary. So it was kind of funny, but there was like definitely some growth there. You could see some growth in the character where you actually grew to like him a lot more than you did at the first. So I really enjoyed it while rewatching it tonight. So
for Real Genius, my first instinct is to say Satisfactory. And I'm going to stick with that. And I'm sort of considering the fact that you guys went plus and I didn't as sort of the variable of emotional attachment.
We have some nostalgia.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I am perfectly...
Like I said, I have not seen this since I was like 18? It's been a while. 17 years.
I'm perfectly content giving it a strong Satisfactory and allowing that plus to be the emotional variable.
Yeah.
With Finding Forrester, I got to give it an excellent minus. Like, it's a really great movie. A really, really, really great movie. For all the reasons you guys have enumerated, I'm not going to go on too much about either, because you guys have said pretty much everything that needs to be said. People, watch these movies.
Yeah, I feel good about both of these. This is one of those box office battles where it's like, you got two great movies. It's not me shilling Doctor Strange or Batman Forever.
That's
another
right.
Val Kilmer joint. That was awful. By the way, next week, can I just tease it?
Hit it.
We don't do this often. I can't wait.
I'm excited.
Next week, we got Highlander, another Sean Connery joint.
That's true.
Versus
Mortal Kombat.
So we got a Christopher Lambert off.
You mean a Christopher Lambert off?
No, I mean Lambert.
Lambert.
Sir. Lambert.
Get it?
Hey,
listen,
you're
going
to have to listen to this.
You have a week. Get it right.
You know what? We're going to debate this in a week about the Lambert off.
Fill those seats so we don't have to.
Hi, I'm Biggs. I'm here to tell you about the wonderful opportunities afforded to you by subscribing to all the wonderful podcasts here at the Not Safe for Network. Subscribe to Montucky's Guys at montuckysguys.blogspot.com, and you could find a career in woodworking, mechanic, or TV VCR repair. Subscribe to We Had a Good Life at wehadagoodlife.com, and you'll discover opportunities such as cobbler, fire and brimstone layer, or advanced lifeguard technician. Subscribe to Shooting the Shit Show at shootingtheshitshow.blogspot.com, and you'll love the prospects available in the field
examples of cell phone sales, dragon grooming, or masters of the custodial arts. Subscribe to Real Roulette at realroulettewithzachandbiggs.blogspot.com and you'll be awed by the chances to spread your wings in dot matrix printer sales, do-it-yourself manual writer, or subservient satanic minion. Subscribe to Box Office Battle at boxofficebattle.blogspot.com and explore the magnificent fields of farmhand personal assistant, snake oil salesman, or professional couch surfer. And don't forget to sharpen your workplace skills with the new podcast That's Debatable coming soon. The Not Safe for Network is dedicated to help you find that shiny new job that you never knew you wanted.